All right. Welcome back to our program. Hour number two is underway. Thanks for joining us. We've got lines open, 253-5959, star 590 from AT&T, 1-877-777-0590. Also via email at LarryGloverLive@gmail.com. Tonight's program brought to you by Jack King Ford. The end of the year is a great time to buy a vehicle, and Jack King and Versailles has got a great selection of used cars, trucks, SUVs in their back row and mid-row, Joe, and their certified pre-owned inventory. Now, if new is what you're looking for, then you need to check out their selection on their website at kaneford.com. They've got a great selection of Explorers, F-150s, the popular Fusion, Escape, and the Edge. Jack King Ford, definitely worth the short drive from Lexington for a great buying experience and to save thousands. Just check out the reviews that tell the story. I've got a Jack King Ford. I bought an Edge about 4 years ago. I've got 160,000 miles, and I just run the wheels off of it. And it operates and runs just like it should. It's not as clean as it should be, I'll tell you that, but that's not their fault. I love it, and we'll get another one maybe soon, but it runs great. So I love it. That's a Jack King Ford, and their website, kingford.com. We got Jeff Drummond joining us on the program from allwildcats.com. His appearance brought to you by our buddies over at Sutton's Restaurant. They've got Asabuco coming up on Saturday night for Christmas Eve. They'll be serving dinner until 10. The Asabuco, as long as it lasts, the bar will be open to midnight. And by the way, they also deliver too, but on Christmas Eve, only until 4. You can buy gift cards too. If you buy a $25 gift card, you get a free $5 gift card. So you actually get $30 for $25 at Sutton's Restaurant. Check out their website for more information about all of this at suttonsrestaurant.com. Or just to go by the restaurant. There's really no excuse for not trying it. They are located at the corner of Richmond Road in Manowar. And if you go once, I guarantee you go again because the food is just that good. It's Sutton's Restaurant. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the show. Thank you. And what's your sort of your takeaway from Kentucky's three-point hiccup last night at the Chum Bucket? What do you think?
Well, after having some time to kind of digest it and look over everything that went down, it kind of reaffirmed in a lot of ways to me what I thought going into the game. And that was in a rivalry game on a opponent's home court, top 10 opponent's home court, a lot of things would have to go against Kentucky in my mind for Louisville to win that game. And almost across the board, you know, Louisville outperformed Kentucky in almost every category. So even then, you look up at the end of the game, and Malik Monk has a shot to tie it. So I'm not really sure completely how to gauge the whole game as a whole, because it felt like Kentucky played pretty poorly. And then you look at it at the end, against all the odds, you know, they had a shot there at the end to extend that game, put it into overtime.
Well, actually, you know, that's the thing about it is that Kentucky was down 6 and Louisville had the ball. And I thought it's kind of remarkable that Kentucky was even in a position to try to tie the game, actually. I mean, they finished fast. I still think they've got to create more offensive balance. You and I have talked about that. I've talked about it earlier in this program with our callers and also with Roger Harden, who's on a minute ago, that Bam had a good thing going last night. I was disappointed that Kentucky didn't look for him more, though. He was 5 of 6 from the field, two or three monster dunks. It was a game where I think he could have had a big game, but his teammates didn't look for him enough. And there was a couple of instances where he was just flat out wide open and it didn't go to him.
Yeah, there were some similarities to this game and the UCLA game in my mind, because you saw the backcourt settle for a lot of jump shots, especially Briscoe and Fox, that really aren't real advisable for those two guys to be taking. Mm-hmm. When Adebayo was doing a pretty decent job inside. And I know Cal wants to feed him more, but I do think it's Cal's responsibility to make sure that happens, because he's got direct control over those guards and what they're doing. And, you know, if he doesn't hold them accountable for, you know, getting the ball into the post, it's going to be difficult to develop that. But it's something that I feel like we're going to see them focus on during their practices before, you know, the Ole Miss game, the SEC opener. I looked at that to be a big-time priority for them and getting it to him early and often against the Rebels.
We're talking with Jeff Drummond from allwildcats.com. His appearance is sponsored by our buddies over at Sutton's Restaurant, located at the corner of Richmond Road and Man of War. Jeff, I think the two things, I think right now Kentucky, as they are, I think are probably, at, with no real future or significant development, I think are about a Sweet 16 team. I think they can be a Final Four team if they shore up one of the two areas. And I think they are a championship caliber team if they shore up both areas. One is the interior game. If they can get Bam Adebayo to become a consistent 15-10, and a guy that they can reliably go to get them a bucket when they're in a pinch, then I think they'll be in fine shape. Plus, Calipari talked also in the preseason camp about how he thought this could be an elite defensive team. I know that the North Carolina game and UCLA game skews things a little bit, but they gave up 73 to an offensive challenged Louisville team. I'm not saying that they're a bad defensive team. I don't think Kentucky's anywhere near being an elite defensive team. I think they can be in terms of athleticism, but do they want to be? Are they willing to pay the price to absorb the sort of the pain and the legs, the effort? Are they committed to being a great defensive team? I think the jury's still out in that regard.
Well, you see way too many uncontested three-pointers right now. That's a really poor-shooting Louisville team that got really friendly looks from the Kentucky defense. Especially, Quentin Snyder is not going to be mistaken by anybody for a sharpshooter, and they let him set his feet and get off a lot of good shots early. I think he built confidence from that, and he just played an outstanding game. I thought he had total control of that game from the backcourt standpoint all night long. But you're not seeing Kentucky help and move their feet and doing the things that Cal said in the preseason. Mm-hmm. I think he even said at one point, I thought this could be his best defensive team.
Yeah.
And he thought they would maul people defensively. And not only are they not doing that, they're not even coming close to doing that.
Jeff, I would argue that of his eight teams in Kentucky, that they're in the bottom half defensively. I mean, I don't think they're even near. I mean, listen, you start looking at 2015 and 2012. I mean, it's an insult to those teams to even talk about a comparison to be made at this point.
Oh, yeah. The only one he's had worse than this is the NIT team, which was really challenged from a personnel standpoint.
But they did have at least one defensive stopper back there protecting the rim in Nerlens Noel. This team doesn't have that even. And that's another thing, too. He talked about this team being able to contest the rim, that they were long, and we haven't really seen that either. I don't know that this team can be a great defensive team. I think they can be good enough if they can shore up the interior offensive play with Bam Adebayo. The question is can they do either? I think the Bam aspect will happen. I mean, you see the potential in him now to do that. But to win a national championship, I think you have to be able to play lockdown defense for stretches against good teams to weather lulls in scoring. And I'm not convinced this team is going to get to that point yet. Time will tell, obviously.
Yeah, it needs to come along, significantly. But he's kind of at a point right now where it's really tough because you've got a guy like Gabriel, in theory, should be giving you that length and a good defensive presence. But he's not doing that, and he's not giving you anything offensively. Mm-hmm. So you've got him. That's an issue. You've got Derek Willis, who's never been a great defensive player, but he does have a little bit of length in the right matchups. He can bother some people. He's not giving you anything offensively. They're almost at a point now where Cal's got to decide, do I make an adjustment to get Michael Mulder in there, like he's been talking about, maybe playing four guards and doing a Villanova type approach, which would probably mean sacrificing a little bit of defense to get better offensively, or does he go the other direction and make it so that this team tries to become more defensive oriented? And I worry about that a little bit because everything, if you follow the Ken Palm sites and some of the efficiency type advanced statistics in basketball for the last, five, six, 7 years, it is all leaned towards the team that cuts down the nets has got to be able to play offense and score. And the defense is really not that important when you get right down to it. You got to put the ball in the bucket and score more points. And I think, maybe that means we may see more Michael Mulder.
Yeah. Yeah, Calipari seems reluctant to play him, I think primarily because he's not going to replace Fox because he's not a point guard, or he's not going to replace Briscoe because he's not the defensive player Briscoe is. So the only guy he can really play instead of is Malik Monk. And when a guy puts up 47, it's understandably a coach is reluctant to take him out of the game. But last night's an instance where when they went to a zone defense and Monk wasn't hitting, that it was an opportunity for Mulder to step in and beat that guy. And he got a couple of opportunities and made a couple of shots. I know people have been critical after the show, after the game last night on our show and earlier tonight, saying that they think Mulder should have been in the game for the last 8 or 9 seconds. But it's kind of pointless because Monk was taking the shot. I mean, Mulder wasn't going to get the shot, and you needed a guy that can handle the basketball a little bit better, you know. And there's no point in putting Mulder in the game there because he wasn't going to shoot the ball.
Well, Kentucky got exactly what it wanted. It got an open, squared up, beautiful look from Malik Monk that just caught the front rim for a chance. I don't know what – I heard some people being critical of that. Even somebody said Cal doesn't use plays, and that's why they lost. And that was a play. Briscoe took the ball and got a rub off of his man, and he got the I think it's a walk-on kid for Louisville in a switch on Malik Monk, which Malik Monk's eyes had to get huge when he saw that kid on him. Shot just didn't fall. But, you know, if I'm putting myself inside a Cal's head, dangerous sometimes, but I think he's got to look and see that he's not getting anything from Gabriel and Willis. And what's the point of playing a four just for the sake of having a 6'10 guy up there? If they're not giving you anything, maybe give that Villanova look a try and see what it looks like.
Well, he's talked about that a little bit. Yeah, he's talked about going with the four-guard offense. Although I will say this, though, last night, Willis had you 9 rebounds last night, and that's, you know, in a game like that, that's not a small thing.
He did. I'm just kind of talking about defense and, you know, offense and defensive production. He did get on the boards pretty nice. Some of those were important, but, you know, you got to get more. You know, those guys gave you nothing offensive production-wise, and they didn't guard anybody.
Hey, Jeff, I want to, if I can, if you're able to, I'd like to hold you through a break. I want to talk to you about the UNC story that's emerged today that's significant and needs to be addressed, because you and I have been critical of the NCAA of going light on UNC, that they are likely not going to punish UNC. Now it looks like the basketball program's in some trouble, and both national titles, 05 and 09, could be on the line here. And why the SEC has ties to this. And if you can, I'd like to hold you through the break and address this with you after the break. Can I hold you through?
Yeah, that should be okay.
Okay. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We're going to talk to Jeff about UNC facing extra benefit charges in that academic case involving the basketball program going back to 2002 and why SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey's involved in this. We'll talk about this after the break here on 590 WVLK. All right, welcome back to our program here on 590 WVLK. We've got lines open, 253-599, *590 from AT&T, 1-877-777-0590. Jeff Drummond joining us from allwildcats.com. And Jeff, you and I have been pretty vocal in our criticism of the NCAA and what appeared to be their intentions of going light on North Carolina and not punishing the basketball program at all. Today, the NCAA issued yet another amended notice of allegations stemming from the academic scandal at UNC, and the new charge could lead to serious consequences for the men's basketball team. The new allegations include extra benefit charge involving the men's basketball program and cover a period from 2002 and 3 through the 2010 and 11 season. The Heels won titles in 05 and 09. If the NCAA, through its committee on infractions, concludes that some of the players on that team received extra benefits, they could be deemed ineligible, which could lead to serious charges, including potentially vacating those titles. Here's the SEC angle, which is kind of interesting, too. The SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey involved. The AD for North Carolina, Bubba Cunningham, is charging that when the university met with the NCAA in October for a jurisdictional meeting, Committee on Infractions Chair and SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey refused to admit two documents into record that explain why the second notice of allegations, which removed the impermissible benefits allegations to Cleveland's basketball, was fair and aligned properly with the NCAA bylaws. Then, according to Cunningham, Sankey argued that the absence of those documents gave the enforcement staff reason to revisit and amend the notice of allegations once more. I applaud Greg Sankey because they should not get off the hook here. What they did, I think, is far worse than what a lot of programs have gotten, you know, multiple year postseason bans for. What's your take on this, Jeff? Do you think that they'll lose any titles, and will they receive any kind of probation over this?
I'm still a little skeptical if it'll get to that point, but this does make you kind of raise an eyebrow a little bit that they would come back with this. I know they received so much negative publicity when that second letter came around and they removed the improper benefits language and removed basketball and football specifically, when it was quite clear that, you know, half of the 3,000 people taking advantage of that course were football and basketball. So for them to go back and you know, restake the original language that was in that one letter makes you think that they're a little more serious about it than originally expected. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably due to the fact that you've got, is it the News Observer? Is that the paper that's been?
Yes. Dan King's the guy that's been the primary contact on that story.
I mean, they've been an absolute bulldog on this from the start. And it's not, you know, it's not like blogs and just kind of the talking heads on TV have been calling attention to this. You have actual investigative journalists leading the fight and leading the charge on this. And I think that has lent it a lot of credibility. And, you know, after they tried to take out some of that stuff, they probably only, you know, emboldened the paper even more to say, hey, you're not going to get away with this.
Here's why UNC is wrong in arguing that the fact that students in the general population were taking the classes too, and therefore it's not an athletic issue. I can tell you, and you know this too, Jeff, when you go to college, one of the first things you learn at college is what the bunny classes are. And, you know, what would prevent a program from having a couple of bunny classes per semester for their athletes and just funnel a couple of the general population students that may be friendly with the players into those classes to be able to make the claim, well, hey, listen, well, you know, here's three or four kids in these classes and they're not athletes, so obviously it's available to anybody. I mean, you could argue that, and you can arguably do that for every single athlete over the course of every semester to keep kids eligible and never have an eligibility issue by simply offering bunny classes that are so easy that anybody could pass them and just funnel a couple of regular kids in them, and then you're safe and clear. That's why it's wrong.
Yeah, I think that was pretty clearly the apparatus, too. I mean, to argue against that at this point is just kind of being intellectually dishonest.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I know that they don't like to vacate. I actually think that they're going to – here's what I think will happen. I think that they probably will not vacate the titles, but I think UNC will get postseason bans. I think they'll miss at least a year, maybe two. But I just can't see the NCAA stripping titles away from a program like UNC and one of its signature sports. I mean, football and basketball are number one and number two with the NCAA, and I don't see them stripping a national title. So I think that they probably will let the championship stand, but I think UNC might actually get a postseason ban now, and they should. And frankly, they should lose the two titles, two. But I just don't know that the NCAA is going to be. I don't know that they're going to want to go there, and because there's going to be some people that are going to argue that taking the titles away is unfair. And I don't agree with that, but I think people will argue that. I think the NCAA is going to want to avoid that that hornet's nest by taking titles away.
Yeah, and you open up the door to, like, retroactive problems at other places, too. What if they found out, you know, 10 years from now that, you know, something happened at Villanova this year, you know? And, you know, if you do that to North Carolina, you've got to put it on the table for everybody that's out there.
Yeah, yes and no, though. I mean, UMass used an eligible player and got a Final Four ticket away, but 3 years later Duke did. They didn't. So, I mean, they've got a history of having different sets of standards, so truthfully. So, and I think that's part of the issue for the NCAA is they have such – you know, they have lapses in memory of what they've done in the past, and it does seem like their preferred programs have gotten away with things that other programs don't get. You know, and of course, they always make the argument, it's like, well, you know, they don't have a history of being, they have a history of being compliant with the NCAAs, but if you never sting them once, they always have a history of being compliant. So yeah. I think that they probably will keep their titles, but they might actually get they might actually get smacked now. The fact that they've gone, and I think that Greg Sankey probably saw that this is ridiculous. It's not right. And they certainly wouldn't hesitate Nick and one of our schools. And I'm not going to let this stand. Is he going after North Carolina because they're an ACC? No, but I think he is. I think he is looking at them saying, you wouldn't hesitate for a second to nick one of our football programs over something like this. You know, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. And I do think that he's taking it personal a lot of ways. I think that's possible.
One of the issues with the NCAA and consistency is it's not the same people. You know, the NCAA is everybody in theory. It's all the colleges. And then again, it's nobody because, you know, you've got a different set of people every few years that's reviewing this stuff and using their judgment on how to deal with it. So, you know, maybe a group that hit UMass back in the day or even Memphis and then the ones that, you know, heard the Duke case, it's different people in every case.
Jeff, I want to get you just your feeling on the Grayson Allen thing. I know Duke suspended him indefinitely. I don't think there's any doubt he'll be back before they play anybody of any quality, frankly. At the same time, I agree with Roger that, you know, the tripping is a sign that it's an ongoing issue. But the tantrum he threw on the bench last night after being taken out of the game and getting the technical foul was unnerving. I mean, the volatility and the out of control anger, it was disturbing. I agree. People said that the incident on the bench was worse. The tripping started it, and because it's been a chronic problem, it's an issue. But I agree that the tantrum he threw on the bench was very disturbing.
Yeah, that was like something you'd see from a toddler or a young, very young person, you know, at Walmart or something. We've all run into that before and how uncomfortable that is. It was almost uncomfortable to watch the video while some people were laughing at it. But it's, you know, it's an issue with him. And I don't know how they resolve it. I know they're not going to leave him down for long. No. But if you don't, it's not going to change anything. I mean, he's got a serious problem. I suggested earlier today, I said, sit him down for a month and make it stated that you're going to do that. That is long enough time for him to know how much it, you know, hurts himself and his team. He's going to miss some significant games if you say it's a month. It's not just going to be a matter of, you know, three games that Duke could win with or without him, which in my mind only kind of reinforces the behavior because he doesn't pay any kind of penalty from it. He doesn't learn. For people to learn from their mistakes, there's got to be significant consequences.
Yeah, I think it's going to take more than just a couple of counseling sessions. We deal with people with anger management issues. It's the same thing with, like, addiction. And I'm not trying to make light of it or even compare the two, really, because they're not comparable in many regards. But in one regard, I think they are, is that it's difficult to break that cycle in just a couple of meetings in a week or two of maybe corrective behavior. Jeff, I appreciate the time, as always. Listen, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you watch some of the ESPN programming today, the folks on, you know, PTI kind of even, you know, glossed over it and said, what's the big deal here? You know, what happens when he trips somebody and they tear their ACL if it's against Louisville and they lose Quentin Snyder for the rest of the year? Is that what it's going to take for them to take serious action to stopping and curbing the behavior?
Yeah, I don't disagree. Jeff, I appreciate it as well. Listen, have a great Christmas, Jeff. I appreciate the time. Thank you, and we'll see you after the holidays. It's Jeff Drummond from allwildcats.com. Read his coverage of Kentucky as they get ready for the Tax Slayer Bowl on allwildcats.com. Thanks, Jeff. Have a Merry Christmas. We'll talk to you soon. All right, so we'll take a break. We'll come back. We've got TJ Beiser looming after the break here on Larry Glover Live, presented by Jack King Ford. All right, so welcome back to our program here on 590 WVLK. We have lines open, 253-595-5590 from AT&T, 1-877-777-0590. Also via email at LarryGloverLive@gmail.com. Tonight's show brought to you by Jack Kane Ford, to offering great quality cars at great prices. Just a short drive from Lexington and Versailles, Jack Kane Ford. TJ Beiser joining us on the program. TJ, Kentucky goes into Louisville last night, had a chance to win, didn't play well at all, but had a chance to win, didn't get it done. Your thoughts on the Cats and Cards?
Well, you know, I think to me, I've never been a believer in a team needs to lose. You know, a couple of years ago when Kentucky was undefeated, there was a lot of talk about will a loss help them for the postseason? Does it teach you something? Does it kind of take the pressure off of you? I don't believe in that, but I do think there are so many good things from the game last night that if they do improve on it, they take the lessons that they were taught last night in Louisville, that they can be a much better basketball team. And sometimes it takes a game like that to open your eyes, if that makes sense. And I think it was a team in Louisville that forced Kentucky to do things that they're not entirely comfortable doing. And those things are playing in the half court, which everybody talked about. And it changes the backcourt. The backcourt of De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk is probably the most athletic in the country, but they stopped using that athleticism. They were happy to just pull up for shots, and they scored points. They had 37 between them, but they didn't find efficient ways to score. They were not doing it in a way that involved their teammates, and I think they really settled into doing exactly what Louisville wanted them to do, which was shoot contested shots rather than get to the basket. And so I think there are a lot of things we saw from this team last night that are not necessarily their habits that we've seen throughout the course of the year. And I don't think there are a lot of other teams that they'll play that can do to them what Louisville did. But you can learn from those, and this can be a launching pad for them throughout the rest of the season to take those lessons, get better. And when they come to the tournament and they've got a team that's making them have smart, you know, forcing them to try to make those smart decisions in the half court, they're going to be better suited to do it because they've seen the way they did not handle it well against Louisville.
TJ, I really thought that Kentucky wasted an opportunity to go to Bam last night. He was playing well.
Yeah.
He was finishing with authority around the bucket. A couple of instances, he was wide open. They didn't feed him the ball. He was 5 of 6 last night. You know, he's not always been very efficient offensively. He was last night, and I thought they really missed an opportunity to get him going. And he could have, I mean, I think he could have had a really big game, but they just didn't look for him. And I think that's on Calipari because, you know, he talked openly about, you know, too many possessions without Monk getting a shot and run specific plays for him. At some point, I think Calipari has to step in and tell these kids, hey, listen, feed the ball to Bam. He's playing well. Get it to him. And then Cal didn't. I think at some point, at some part, that's on Cal for not making them and not calling the plays to do it.
Yeah, you know, going back through the game today and looking at the film, it wasn't just that Bam was scoring. It was Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox and Michael Mulder and Derek Willis and Briscoe. They were all getting their best looks at the basket after the ball went into Bam. And for anybody who's played basketball or watched basketball or coached basketball, that's no revelation. This is something that coaches have screamed for years and years and years. Kentucky's been able to get by, though, this year by running the ball up and down the court. They haven't always had to look for that post play. And I don't think Bam is a phenomenal passer out of the post, but he's good enough. And last night when he caught the ball, when it was delivered to him well, there were a couple of bad passes that put him in a bad spot. But when he got the ball, he was able to make good decisions. And you know, going back a couple of years, Kentucky's offense, the year that they went 38-1, for all the weapons they had and all the great things they could do, when the ball went inside and came back out, that's when they were dominant. Dakari Johnson was a very good passer. He became a good passer out of the block. Carl Towns was really good at it. Willie got more comfortable with it. That's what made them dangerous. And when they got away from it, you know, those were the games that they struggled with. Georgia, certainly Wisconsin, those were the games where, okay, the ball's in the guard's hand, but you're not really forcing them to pay attention to what's going on inside. And last night, they settled for what Louisville wanted them to do. They make Louisville uncomfortable as defenders. And if you're going to be a good team, you've got to be able to do that. And certainly that's a youth thing. That's something that with experience and coaching and film and all these things, this team should grow out of and find a way to get to the post. But, you know, the way they run their offense and the way Calipari's teams have usually run their offense, I think the post play a lot of times is not utilized as much as it can be because guards are so great and they want to take the ball into their hands. And last night there was just too much of that happening.
Yep, I agree with that. The other issue I see, and I think if Kentucky shores up that area and starts getting Bam more looks on a consistent basis in big games, I think they'll be fine offensively. I think it'll sort itself out. The other issue is the defense. You know, Calipari talks in the early portion of the season, even before the season began, that he thought this team could be an elite defensive team, maybe his best defensive team. I don't even think this team's even in the top half of his teams defensively. I mean, I think if you ranked them 1 through 8, I think they'd be below 5. It's far enough into the season. I wonder how good of a defensive team they can be because doesn't look to me like they're committed to being a great defensive team. And being great defensively is something you have to commit to. I don't see that kind of commitment.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that's also why they can be that, because they are so gifted physically. You know, the things that you want out of a defender, if you're creating the perfect perimeter defender, you want a guy that's quick, who has length to his arms, who's tall, who can jump in passing lanes. That is De'Aaron Fox. That is Malik Monk. Briscoe's a little different, but he understands it. The problem is that commitment. And De'Aaron Fox, going back to the UCLA game, and not to keep harping on him, he was abused by Lonzo Ball because he didn't want to get down and play defense. He stands straight up and just walks next to his guy almost the entire game. And then when his man gets the ball, he's out of position. I do think their rotations have gotten better. There are fewer times in each game when a guy's driving to the basket, there's not a rotation or guys get open looks. I do think the rotations have gotten better, but their on-ball defense is not good right now. And the only excuse for it is that these guys are just not I don't know if they realize they have to bring that every single play on the defensive end, because they've gotten by their entire lives being so athletic and being bigger and better than the guy that they're going against. And for the non-conference schedule, for, you know, at least 9 of those games, 8 of those games, that's been the case too. So it's not something you can do for 2 minutes here and then, you know what, we'll turn it on the last 4 or 5 minutes of the game. You have to do it the entire game. And I think Calipari's right in saying this team can be that because they are physically gifted in all areas of the court, and they have depth, and they can come at you. If a guy really plays defense the way they want him to play defense, Cal can sub him out and give him a break and put him right back in there. That's the idea behind playing that way and having depth. But I think you're right. They're not even in the top 5 in the teams that he's had here in terms of their execution on the defensive end this year.
We're talking with TJ Beiser from KSTV and CN2. TJ, your impression of what Kentucky could be back in early November and now, any change there? Do you still feel like that they can be as good as you thought they could be when the season began?
Yeah, I think so. You know, to me, the 2 games they've lost, UCLA, the way UCLA beat them was to spread them out with 5 guys that could pass the ball and 5 guys that could drive and 5 guys that could shoot. You're not going to see a lot of that. You know, you're not going to see more than maybe 2-3 teams in all of college basketball that can play that way with those types of players. The way Louisville played last night, you're going to see that style, but you're not going to see with that talent and, you know, that environment. That's a little unique as well. So, to me, Kentucky is right now a team that, on talent alone and the way they are playing, this is a Sweet 16, maybe Elite 8 team. Like, as of today, if the tournament started today, no question, because they are that good, and they're good enough in terms of what they do and what they understand. But to get to the Final Four, to get to a national championship, to be that sort of team, they've got to take the jump. And this is when it starts. They've got an opportunity to go on the road against Ole Miss, a team they should handle pretty well. Then you get into the conference play, get some things figured out against teams that are not nearly as good as you. Then you can go get a resume win. You can make a statement at Rupp against Kansas. And so the schedule sets up for them to do that. I think they're every bit as talented as we thought in the preseason. I thought they would take more lumps early than they, you know, last night was a big lump and they took one against UCLA. But this is still a team that's really, really good. And their margin for getting to being great is not that big. It's just a matter of committing to it and getting there together.
We're talking with TJ Beiser. TJ, I want to shift gears and talk to you a little bit about the UNC thing. I'm not sure how closely you've been able to follow it today. I know a lot of UK stuff going on, but The NCAA has issued another notice of allegations against Carolina. This time they're coming after the basketball program. They are charging extra benefits against the basketball program, ranging from the period covering the 2003 season to the 2011 season. That would include two national championship seasons. Now, if they deem the impermissible benefits were given, and my guess is that they're going to make that charge now, they're going to make it stick, because this is the third time they've come back to this. I can't imagine they, at the very end of the day, come back and say, no, they're good. So, That would mean that some players could be ruled ineligible and could mean that Carolina could vacate some titles. What's interesting is the whole SEC angle, where SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey basically said, we're not going to let you admit two documents that explains why the second allegation and those allegations should be permitted, therefore clearing the way for this third one. And it looks like he's stepping and intervening and saying, listen, this isn't right. They need to be punished for this, and I'm not going to accept this because this is a bunch of BS. And it's almost like you envision him saying, listen, if this were Auburn football, you would be making you'd be charging them for it, and you know it. This I know the North Carolina basketball, but they need to be treated exactly the same way Tennessee football would be treated. And it's almost like you can sort of envision him saying that this isn't fair. They're being treated differently. They're being treated with privilege, and this isn't fair.
Yeah, and there's also a basketball coach in the SEC who has a good relationship with Roy Williams and would never say anything negative publicly, but I'm sure something burns inside of him because he has been punished over things that were beyond his control that were
yes,
far less egregious than these allegations if they are true. I wouldn't be surprised if some sort of conversation was had on that level. Anytime you hear Commissioner Sankey talk, John Calipari's name comes up if it's somewhat related to basketball, if it's related to a big picture idea, the vision of the conference. He is in their ear. He is one of the guys that has influence in this conference. And if he asked John Calipari his opinion, that would be my guess that he would say, look, they need to be held accountable for this because I have gone through this myself. I have been, you know, labeled a certain way for a lot of years. It cost me the Kentucky job the first time around. We need to hold them accountable. And I'm not saying that happened. I have no idea if that happened. But I would not be surprised if that was also an angle that plays into it, because Cal would never say anything bad publicly about North Carolina. I don't think he'd say anything negative about Roy Williams publicly. Even privately, I don't think he'd do that. But in a matter of this, I do think it's serious enough and it affects the game that's something that he would have an opinion on.
Do you think that Carolina will have a title taken away? Or title? I mean, listen, I would think that if you're going to take one title away, you take both of them away. So, I mean, I think it'll be all or nothing. Either they lose two or they don't lose any. Do you think they lose the national championship over this?
I don't. And you know, I am of the belief that the NCAA will do everything they can to avoid touching anyone's title. They will let you get away with anything. They will turn whatever it takes. So to me, including that in there, the title years, is throwing the whole book at you and saying, okay, we want you, you know, in our mind, our punishment, acceptable punishment is this. So we're going to double it up when we send it to you. And let's negotiate it down to what we wanted in the first place. I would be shocked if they touch any national championships ever in basketball or football, because that becomes a story that goes beyond ESPN, goes beyond, you know, sports fans. That hits the Today Show, that hits Good Morning America, and then that hits America. And that's when stories take on a massive, they reach people that don't care otherwise. That is horrible press for the NCAA, for the universities. Yep. I don't think that either party wants that.
It would be especially, chafing to Calipari, who lost a runner-up because he used a player that was deemed ineligible retroactively after they already ruled him eligible. And the reason he was ruled ineligible basically because he didn't respond. Derrick Rose didn't respond in a timely fashion to a flagged SAT score. It was, I mean, people mistakenly think that it was ruled that he cheated. They didn't rule that he cheated. They flagged the score and asked him to respond within 90 days and sent it to his Chicago address. He wasn't living there at the time. He never got it, and therefore he didn't respond in time, and it was invalidated because he didn't respond to it. That's why he was deemed ineligible. They think it's because he ruled he cheated. That was never ruled or even agreed to that he cheated. It's just because it would be ironic that if they get to keep their titles And then they ruled that this UNC team, this one in particular, is ineligible for this upcoming NCAA tournament. Therefore, Kentucky would lose. They wouldn't lose a quality win, I guess, but their best win would be against a team that didn't make the tournament.
Yeah, and as someone who I have like 400 unread text messages on my phone, I have all the sympathy in the world for Derrick Rose in that situation, not responding. Sometimes it just happens.
We got Robbie, and this is the last question. Robbie says, I heard you say on the radio they don't even want to touch national titles. What about USC in football in 2004 when they took away a title? I think the difference is the AP titles and the BCS titles that USC won, there was no official association or tie to the NCAA directly. Therefore, the NCAA didn't strip them of the national championship. The AP and the BCS did, and that they're not affiliated with the NCAA in any way, shape, or form at that time. It is now, but it wasn't at the time, and that's why it's different.
Yeah, I think, you know, where I'm coming from, too, is the Calipari situation, the Derrick Rose losing the runner-up, but Kansas won the national title with Darrell Arthur, who was later ruled to have taken or falsified grades in high school, I believe, or he had something was changed. He wasn't technically even eligible to be a college basketball player, but they said, lose a scholarship this year and let's keep it quiet. I just think that becomes if they can avoid it, they will, is sort of how I feel about it.
I always thought it was unusual that they take away Memphis's runner-up for using an ineligible player at the same time Kansas won the national championship while they were actually on probation. TJ, I appreciate it as always, my friend. Thank you very much. You guys have a great Christmas. We'll see you soon.
All right. Thanks, Larry. You too.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll come up. We'll wrap up tonight's program next here on Larry Glover Live, presented by Jack Keane Ford. All right, so welcome back to our program here on 590 WVLK. Coming up on the program tomorrow night, I know we said last night that after the game, the sky was going to take tomorrow off, but I talked to him today. He says, I got too much to say about the Kentucky-Louisville game, so he's going to come back and join us again tomorrow night, and we'll give us – I talked to him about it today. He had some really good thoughts about the Kentucky and Louisville game. We're going to hear from Scott coming up tomorrow night in the second hour and talk a little bit about what Kentucky needs to do, how there is a need to improve on, and just some thoughts about Kentucky's potential. We'll do that coming up. Also, we'll be talking with Chris Fisher about the football Wildcats as they begin to make their final preparations for the Georgia Tech Ramblin' Wreck and the Tax Slayer Bowl coming up on New Year's Eve. That one just about a week away now, a week from Saturday when the Cats and the Yellow Jackets will get together. Certainly looking forward to that one, playing at Everbank Field in Jacksonville. A great opportunity. I know it's just a bowl game, and sometimes bowl games are viewed as just sort of rewards and exhibitions. I think this bowl game is really important to the future of Kentucky football. I think a win would mean a lot to get to 8 wins. Lots of Florida kids will be around watching Kentucky and observing them, maybe even watching their practices. I think it's really important for Kentucky to get the W, I believe. And I think it can go a long way towards being a springboard for 2017. So we'll talk with Chris Fisher about that coming up on the show tomorrow night. Thanks to our guests, Roger Harden, Jeff Drummond, and TJ Beiser. Thanks to you for listening and participating as well. We'll see you on Friday night, beginning at 6, on the next edition of Larry Glover Live, presented by Jack Keane Ford.